The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Solnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A edition for this week. Should have, edited the intro because it's not Jim and Chris today. It's going to be Jim and, well, I messed that up already. It's going to be Chris and Greg today. No Jim. I was about to say it's going to be Jim and Greg, but that'd be real awkward since Jim's not here at all. So we're lucky enough to have Greg back on the show here. We've got an opportunity to get caught up on a few things while Jim is off on his adventures right now. He's at a training session in Kansas City, I believe, today. And so we thought we'd use this opportunity to dig into the pile of questions that we've got and carve out some LTC-related questions. So today's going to be an LTC-focused Q&A show. These questions have come in, you know, throughout a span of time here. So some are recent, some are a little bit older, but I think all the ones that we've chosen today are going to be kind of helpful to get people a little better understanding of this wild world of long-term care expenses on one hand, and then long-term care insurance talk as well. Those are two related things, but of course there's many ways to fund long-term care expenses. Hopefully you don't face them. Not everyone does, but if you want to be prepared for them, then a plan is appropriate. And sometimes that plan might involve considering insurance, and there's a lot of confusion about how long-term care expenses kind of behave, if you will, and also how long-term care insurance might help you pay for them if they were to arise. So, Greg, welcome to the show. It's been a while.
Hi, Chris. It's good to be back.
Yeah, hope you're doing well. I was trying to think of the last time you were on, when that might be. Do you know when the last time was you were?
I think it was about a year ago.
Wow.
Maybe February of last year.
That is way too long.
Roughly.
Because we do get occasional long-term care questions. This pile that we're going to try to get through some of today has kind of been building up over time. So I know that people want to hear about this. This is something that we usually reserve. Well, comes up occasionally on the side, but we kind of reserve these for when we've got you on the show. So I either need to kick Jim out of the office more often and get you on here, or we'll have all three of us on simultaneously. So how are things in North Carolina?
Sounds good. Those could run long, those
yeah,
podcasts.
True. Oh, that's true. How are things in North Carolina?
Beautiful. I'm just enjoying spring in central North Carolina here. It's been a beautiful week.
Yeah. How's
a lot of gardening in my spare time.
Yeah, been getting rain out there? Because we've been super dry so far here in Colorado.
We haven't gotten a lot recently. We had a little bit earlier in the week, but
last year I went almost to June. I think I might have hit June 1st before I had to turn my sprinkler system on, which was abnormally late for Colorado. But mm-hmm. I should have probably turned mine on a couple of weeks ago. That's how dry it's been here. We have had April has basically been with no rain, which is very odd for us. And it's, you know, here in the Rockies, we get kind of that rain snow mix and then occasional snow storm. And we, mm-hmm. we technically are not totally out of the woods. Out here, the rule is you don't plant outdoors until Mother's Day. That's the weekend that you kind of know you're in the clear from mm-hmm. another late freeze or something. This year, I think we're done with that unless something comes down the pike that surprises everybody. But the big issue we've got is we've got no water going on. It's
yeah,
it's bad.
A serious problem out west, for sure.
Yep, so I'll be firing up my sprinkler system this weekend. Been a little negligent on that. I should have done it a while back, so things are a little brown out back.
We had a storm earlier in the week. It was a very quick one that came through and knocked mm-hmm. our power out for a few hours, which is common when there's a lot of wind. That's very often the mm-hmm. case that we lose power, but it wasn't too bad.
Yeah. Is it usually wind that causes that, or do you get a lot of lightning there?
It's usually wind because a lot of the power lines are above ground and there are a lot of trees. So it's mm-hmm. often a branch, you know, from a tree that yeah. takes down the line.
Well, speaking of spring and gardening, our first question actually, he starts out discussing that. Not that we're going to make this the springtime gardening show, but let's dive into this first question. Mm-hmm. Hi, Jim, Chris, and hopefully Greg. So your hopes have been fulfilled, we'll say, because Greg is here. We'll have to leave Jim off, but Greg's the one we want to answer this question. He starts, I was out using a rototiller in my garden getting it ready for spring. So this is timely. After about 10 minutes, my chest started hurting real bad. I had to stop and lay down. I felt like I couldn't get out of bed. I ended up going to a cardiologist and had an angiogram. I was worried I would not be able to get LTC, and I'm only 50. The great news is that my heart had no problems, so will I be able to get LTC since the test came back negative for any blockage? I would think that this test should make the long-term care insurance company even happier since they can actually see my result and know my ticker is fine, but I got a bad feeling that they won't care about the results, only that I had to have the test. So he's kind of asking, you know, is he out of luck now, even though he's only 50? And this is, you know, this people have heard it a lot on the show. I'll turn it over to you here in a second, but just people that maybe haven't listened for a long period of time. Jim talks regularly about his experience. He's in his 50. He's beyond 50. But he was kind of in his mind waiting to the traditionally recommended age to obtain long-term care insurance, which our industry has usually used age 60 as kind of the standard, if you will, a soft standard, just kind of a suggested date that you're not too old, not too young, kind of that in-betweener. But the point is something happens in your 50s, you could suddenly find yourself uninsurable. And so, you know, Jim's episode that he's gone over, I'm not going to go into great detail. He had the stroke, which he's fully recovered from quite a while ago now. He's now, a year and a half since that happened. But he's going to have an issue with long-term care insurance insurability. This person is thinking the same thing. What's his issue? Do you think this issue is going to make him uninsurable? And then maybe you can share with us what are the things these insurance companies look for?
Sure. Well, first of all, just the fact that he had a test doesn't disqualify him. Mm-hmm. It's really more a matter of what the outcome of the test was. And, you know, for long-term care, some diagnoses might disqualify you outright and others might not. Ones that you think might disqualify you, in fact, won't. So they're really looking at the specific condition or diagnosis. And in that context, what tests, what procedures, what treatments were recommended, and were those followed? And then...
So the episode, they're not so much... I had something happen, so I went in and they tested me. It's not, oh my gosh, they mentioned they had, you know, this issue where he felt the way he did. they're not so much worried about that as much as the test results. So his point that, you know, maybe the test results being negative for a blockage is good news.
Yeah, potentially. You know, certainly they're going to want to know more about his condition and more about his medical history. And what's really important when you're being underwritten for long-term care insurance is what they call comorbidities. And that's really looking at whether somebody might have multiple conditions going on that in combination increase their risk. So in this case, you know, if it's just one episode or one particular condition, what they're really looking for in terms of a test and the outcome of the test is what were the recommendations from the doctor? And did you follow those? And did you fully recover? Now, they're also looking at if you have recovered from whatever the condition might be, meaning that your doctor has said no more treatment required, you're good to go. They're typically, the insurance companies will typically want to see a period of stability that follows that. So it really depends on what the particular diagnosis and treatment was, but it may be 3 months, it may be 6 months. If it's cancer, depending on the stage, it might be 2 years that they have to wait. So it's really a unique, you know, it's unique to the person's situation and what their condition is. Mm-hmm.
Are there, you mentioned there are some things that are kind of automatic disqualifiers or things that when you see in someone's medical questionnaire, because that's usually how we gather some basic information to help them assess or to start to investigate long-term care insurance. What are those things that pretty much are a non-starter for insurability?
Well, there's certainly a number of those. It could be if you look at cognitive impairments, you know, if there's anything related to dementia or Parkinson's, other types of dementias can rule you out. If you have serious neurological issues or rheumatoid arthritis, can be prevent you from being considered, but not always. Often they're really layers that they're going to look at, you know, how looking at your medications, for example, if you take rheumatoid arthritis, that may still be insurable, but not if you're taking certain medications, particularly in certain dosages. So,
so they use that kind of, not that we're underwriters, but that would imply they're looking at kind of severity and treatability and those sorts of things. It's not a,
that's true,
an absolute, true, oh gee, we see this and you're out. It's
right.
They look a little and deeper often, at it.
That's right. And often they're looking at combinations. So, you know, if you look at diabetes, heart disease, smoking, obesity, you know, those conditions in combination can put you at very high risk. And can be problematic in getting coverage. Depression and arthritis in combination, particularly if it's severe, that can be problematic. So it's it really just depends on your situation and what your medical records say. And it also depends to an extent on the insurance company, because they don't all weigh things in the same way. So you can have one insurance company might say, yes, we'll consider you. Whereas another one would say, no, that's too risky for us.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I have seen that happen in our, you know, back and forth working with clients, those who are engaging with you for this either long-term care or what we call aging related expense analysis, that kind of stuff, that sometimes, there's very different answers from one insurance versus another. We see that also with life insurance, but today we're talking about long-term care insurance. But I think that's a great point. Just because you were rejected or denied with one doesn't mean it would be for all. Certainly makes it more likely, I think, but don't make that assumption. So if you've ever applied with just a single insurance company and been denied, first of all, there's this issue of maybe a different company would observe or assess the situation differently. So I wouldn't just give up after one no, which in my mind makes it a little more appealing to work with someone that will pull or request information from multiple insurance companies kind of simultaneously rather than a application at one insurance company, kind of shopping it around is what I call it. I think that's very advantageous. And two, just because somebody has a diagnosis that maybe on one day caused them to be uninsurable, oftentimes it's an issue where if there's been a lull or not a recurrence for some period of time, they become insurable again. Right. So maybe speak to that.
Right.
Is that how often, well, not how often, but that I know that happens. Kind of describe what you see there with some of these companies.
Well, I've certainly seen cases where somebody might not qualify because of a recent procedure or a recent physical therapy. And then we might wait 6 months. You know, the insurance company might say, we'll come back in 6 months and let's try again. And which is, by the way, far better than applying and getting declined. That's what you really want to avoid. So I've worked with clients who have had to come back after a waiting period and did successfully get approved. But the other aspect to that that people need to be aware of is, it's a point in time where you're being evaluated. So we can run what we call our insurability check or pre-qualification check with the various companies and see what they say at a point in time. But then if 4 weeks later you have a procedure, it's possible that whatever that procedure is going to necessitate yet another waiting period. So the point there is that if you think you want to explore long-term care insurance, it's good to know what's in your medical record. And that way, if you're working with us, we can have a good or a better understanding of what they might find in your record or what they will find in your record if they pull your medical record. So having an understanding of that and making sure that whatever doctor's notes are in your record are accurately reflect what's occurred with respect to your health.
Okay, good. Well, I think we kind of addressed him. It's not a foregone conclusion that you're going to have an issue without a broader understanding of your medical records or medical history. There's no, you know, we can't say for sure that the issue that this listener described to us is a barrier to getting this long-term care insurance, but hopefully people that are out there that have been kind of wondering what the thresholds are, what are the things that response was helpful. So let's move on to the second question. I think we did that one some justice. This next one is a question comes in from Temecula, California. Beautiful wine country, Temecula, California, is how it's described. So it starts, hi, hey guys, I do always enjoy your conversations, but I want to hear Greg talk about LTC. You need to get a set of questions together so he can answer. Well, again, here we are. Perfect lead into the show. For example, so here's this question. What is the average rate of inflation for nursing care and or assisted living? Medical care has inflation rate over 3% every year, noticeably over, I'll add. Does the same apply to nursing/assisted living? If so, since average cost now is $100,000 for nursing, me being 50, am I looking at over $200,000 a year in 30 years? How do I plan for that $200,000 cost with LTC insurance for that scenario? And then he goes on with something unrelated to the question. So he's particularly curious about inflation. What do we see there and what do you do about it if that's a concern?
Right. So the inflation rates for long-term care vary widely across the country. They don't necessarily track the medical or health care general inflation rate that he alludes to there. So when we're looking at this, you know, we'll look, we certainly have the numbers for the national median data. We get survey data every year on the cost of long-term care across the country. I can say that for the Temecula area in California, or rather for the state of California, the inflation rates for the last, well, from 2016 to 2020, the compound annual growth rate for home health care in that area is about 7%, assisted living 6%, nursing home care 5%. So the interesting thing in looking at the data, though, on a broader scale nationally, just since the pandemic in the last couple of years, for example, 2020 to 21, home health care inflation rate was about 12.5%. And that just reflects the demand for health care over the last couple of years. For the questioner's data, I would update the numbers a bit, just looking at the Temecula area. The projected median cost of home care today is about $82,000 a year, and nursing home care with a private room is about $153,000 a year.
Mm-hmm. So he was already off with his $100,000 for nursing home care.
Yeah, he was already on the low end in terms of his estimate. So, and we generally look at the median as really the minimum. So what the median means that, you know, half of the costs in your area could be higher, half could be lower. It just depends on where you're getting your care from, what agency, what facility, et cetera. So,
so that would mean, you know, just to look, you know, bring some of your numbers together, you quoted in California, nursing home care at 5% inflation is what it's been for, you know, the 5-year period that you quoted, 2016 through 2020. Mm-hmm. If nursing home care right now median is 153, now that is a private room. You know, there might be a slight reduction for a semi-private room, but a private room 153. That means at 5%, if that continues moving forward, he's not going to be 30 years for it to double. It's going to be less than half that, just over 14 years. The price mm-hmm. doubles at 5%. So, those can be some pretty scary numbers. You know, he was already kind of low in his starting number, and now we're telling him it's going to double twice as fast as what he even thought, and he was worried about that. So mm-hmm. that's eye-opening.
It's very eye-opening. And, you know, certainly California, relative to other parts of the country, the costs are typically higher. And, you know, so there are parts of the country where the costs are much lower. Mm-hmm. And so it's important when we're working with clients to understand in retirement, where do you plan to live? You know, if you're going to stay where you are and that happens to be high cost, well, then we have to factor in our projections based on that. But if you're planning to move to another location in the country, then we would focus more on that for our projections, you know, what the costs are in that region.
So I know the answer to this, but I'm sure he's wondering, can you get long-term care insurance where the benefits increase with those kinds of inflation rates?
Yes, you can. So, and we often do apply an inflation rider, as it's called, which is simply just a benefit that you're adding on the contract. All of the carriers offer some amount of inflation, and sometimes it's simple interest and sometimes it's compound. But the idea is that every year on the policy anniversary, if you own one of these policies, they're going to compound your benefit by whatever percentage you purchased in the contract. And so that, while it does add a lot of cost to a policy, mm-hmm. For people in their 50s and particularly maybe up until your mid-60s, it depends. But generally, we do put some amount of inflation on a policy mm-hmm. To at least try to keep up with the projected cost of care and the inflation on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. I might be springing this on you, and you might not have it at your mm-hmm. fingertips. But even if you talk in close generalities, if you will. California, while not the most expensive, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Alaska is by far the most expensive state for assisted living, nursing home care, et cetera. Is that still true?
Oh, yeah, that's yeah, very
it's
true.
It's like insanely
expensive.
I'll just give
you an example of the latest data shows a median range for a private room in a nursing home nationally is $71,000 to $182,000. That's the range. However, Alaska is $378,000 a year for nursing home private room. So Alaska's the anomaly for sure.
Yeah. But on the other end, let's say someone was particularly sensitive to this and they were going to, I'm not recommending this, but I'm saying they let their choice of state of residence be driven by the reasonableness of the pricing of this kind of care. What are a couple of states that are on the lower end of this?
Well, so for nursing home care, going to some of the southern states, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Wyoming, not a southern state, but just moving to another part of the country, Wyoming, South Dakota, tend to be on the lower end in the terms of the cost. But it depends not only on the state, but also on the type of care, the setting. So, for example, if we look at a home health aid, in my state, that's relatively low compared to, say, Minnesota or Colorado, even for home health aid. So it depends on the type of care as well as the locale.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Question number three we'll get to here now. How about, let's see here. Okay. Well, he addressed this to Jim. We'll answer it anyway on Jim's behalf. Mm-hmm. Jim, great podcast information on long-term care policies. I've heard about an annuity product that will pay out three times what you deposit toward long-term care if you need it. Otherwise, it returns all the money to your beneficiaries upon death. I believe it pays you some kind of yearly return. I'll put that in quotes. But I really don't know much about it. What's it really called? I was wondering if you could discuss the good and bad of an annuity like this. And this comes from George from Pennsylvania. So back east a little bit. Yeah, I don't think we haven't really talked about the annuity options with long-term care benefits attached. We talk about pure, what we call traditional long-term care policies fairly frequently, and then the hybrid life insurance long-term care. This is another form of hybrid, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so maybe kind of share a little bit about this so that I'm sure a lot of people are like George here who are maybe heard about these things but don't really understand how they work.
Sure. So the annuity LTC hybrid that he's referring to, by hybrid, it just simply means that it's a, in this case, a single premium deferred annuity that has an extension for long-term care benefits attached to it. And it's a tax qualified product or policy. And by that, simply means that if you withdraw benefits for long-term care, those come out tax-free. And I'll talk more about that in a moment. So there are three products today on the market. And generally speaking, they offer anywhere from 2 to 3 times the amount that you put into the annuity if you need long-term care. So you get some leverage. You get 2 to 3 times your money if you use that for qualifying long-term care expenses.
Yeah. So let me interject there for people with an annuity that would then pay out for you to use for whatever you want. You're not going to get that kind of trade-off. You're not going to get that much typically. I mean, if you live long enough, we could look at the numbers and maybe you could see that. But over a short period of time, you're certainly not going to get that kind of multiplication effect. By them limiting what you can, take the money out for, it allows them to offer this magnification or leveraging effect. So you give up the ability to use it for anything you want, But you get instead funds for a specific purpose, in this case LTC, at a much higher payout than you would if it was just a more traditional annuity with the traditional annuity formula. So that's kind of a simplistic way of describing it. But that's mm-hmm. when you mention that 2 to 3 times, reason why you're getting that much magnification is you're only accessing that level of payout if it's for LTC.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Right. And so these products can be a good approach for, for example, somebody who can't qualify for traditional long-term care insurance or some of the life insurance, long-term care hybrid policies. And that's because the underwriting is simplified. So it's not as stringent, I guess, is one way to put it, as some of those other policies typically are. And speaking of the underwriting, the typical age range for one of these is 70 to 85. And possibly they might require a cognitive phone interview if you're over age 70. So that's just the general age range. However, where we see the benefit in looking at this type of solution is if you have idle cash value sitting in, for example, sitting in a life insurance policy or an annuity, if you have built up taxable cash value, and let's say the purpose of having that policy is no longer there. So for example, if you have a permanent life insurance policy with cash value and you no longer need that life insurance, you can do what's called a 1035 exchange. So that's in the tax lingo, that just means that you're taking that cash value and the IRS is letting you exchange that into a qualifying long-term care policy, such as the one we're describing here. Mm-hmm. And what that gives you the ability to do is if you have embedded gains in that cash value and you exchange that into one of these annuity long-term care hybrids, if you use that money or that policy for long-term care, they'll first take it from your principal. But then if you get past that, and that's usually a 2-year period, and you exhaust that, then that extension kicks in, that money will come out tax-free. So you avoid income tax on that embedded gain. Mm-hmm. Now, you could just withdraw that cash value in your existing policy and pay taxes on it, and you might mitigate some of that tax impact by deducting long-term care expenses. But the nice thing about this is you get that leverage, you get that potential to double or triple your money if you need long-term care and you use it for that.
Right. So it's, I guess I'll point out too, since you brought up the 1035, and correct me also if I'm wrong, because I know enough about some of this stuff just to be dangerous. My understanding, and I think you mentioned it, that you could roll in or 1035 exchange in from another annuity into one of these annuity products or from life insurance that has cash value into one of these annuity products, which you can't do. That's in right. This rollover kind of I call it a rollover, but it's an exchange into a traditional policy, for instance, and you can't go annuity to life insurance, if I'm
right, that's
correct.
Right.
So that's why that's people right. might say, well, geez, why do these exist? We already have these hybrids built on a life insurance chassis. Well, if you've got an old stale annuity that you don't need for some reason and you want to transform it into an annuity product that still has more focused long-term care benefits, this is what you can exchange into. You couldn't exchange that into one of those life insurance hybrid policies. You could exchange life insurance into one of the life insurance hybrid policies, but there are these restrictions on, you know, which direction you can go with these relationships. So that's, I guess, where I've seen it most frequently, kind of on the menu of choices to be considered when somebody's got one of these annuities that they purchase for a different purpose. Maybe they've identified, they just don't, it's not that valuable to them in its original form, but boy, it'd be nice if we had some long-term care coverage, they can do this kind of exchange into this product.
That's right. And one other advantage, there's one of the three products out there that I'm more familiar with is it does offer what's called a concierge claims service. So what that means is that if you go on claim and you are holding one of these policies, they will assign a point of contact for you and your family to help you navigate through the process. And that's, among the different companies out there, that type of help can really vary, but there is at least one of these companies offering this product that has a very, very good care coordination type of service.
I'm glad you brought that up. I think we've talked about that care coordination, even the concierge level of that in the past, but it's been a while since we've talked about this. So I do want to point out that this can sometimes be a feature that causes people to consider some form of long-term care insurance. And it's not just these annuity products that has this option. There's, I think, all three styles of long-term care, both traditional life insurance-based and annuity-based long-term care with certain companies will have these offerings, even for someone who can self-fund, which we just means they have enough, we name it that as if you have enough resources that you could just pay for these expenses out of pocket if they happened. This extra service, this assigned case coordinator and the guidance that they will provide and the administrative benefits that they will provide can be very helpful, especially if you're single, you don't have someone to deal with this, or you have a spouse or other family members that you don't want to burden with some of these administrative tasks. Don't dismiss it because you think, oh, I have plenty of money, I can do this. It might be worth considering this particular feature as a benefit to you. So I like to bring that up to people. There are some more companies now starting to offer this as kind of an a la carte benefit, this kind of coordination and help and assistance services, but it hasn't become commonplace yet. So this is one place where you can get this. And I've had a number of people that at face value, they weren't all that interested in long-term care because they had plenty of resources. They would not like to pay for long-term care expenses. They hope they don't happen, but they could afford them if they had to. But when they heard about this level of care coordination services that kind of comes alongside of it, that was enough, extra benefit, if you will, above and beyond the financial benefits to have them seriously consider it, even though they were self-funders. So I just wanted to point that out in case people hadn't heard of that service before.
Yeah, and it is important to think about the fact that whether you have substantial assets and feel like you can easily self-fund whatever care you might need. Having that kind of help, and when often you're in a crisis mode planning, and if you have a spouse or partner, family, children, whoever's trying to help and advocate for you, the one who needs care, it can be very, very stressful. It is very, very stressful. So having help to navigate all of that can really mean a lot in the big picture.
Yeah, good point. Okay. Let's see. Next question is from, where they say, another Pennsylvania. Maybe they're neighbors. I don't know. This one isn't as long as it originally looked. This one looks kind of long, but half of it is talking really focused towards Jim and hunting advice. So we don't have to go through that today since Jim's not on the call. I'll make sure he gets that and then looks at it. Hi, Jim. Thank you for the quick response. He must have responded previously to this and gotten asked for more information. So that's where we come to it here. I would first like to hear the three of you, there'll be two today, opine on my email on your podcast. I'm still struggling with the choice between traditional versus hybrid products. And then there is the issue of the complexity and opacity of the contracts. What are the most troublesome gotchas to avoid? And what are the most important considerations and must-haves to include? Once my wife and I are more informed and more comfortable with transitioning from our previous strategy of self-funding to a new strategy of augmenting self-funding with some form of LTC, we'll probably move forward with something. So, yeah, this is kind of an open question, I guess, wanting for some clarity, maybe, you know, some bullet points, if you will, on the differences between what we call traditional LTC versus hybrid LTC. We just talked about one version of hybrid, the annuity version. And then he is asking for some recommended, you know, gotchas to avoid and maybe some things we recommend people definitely look for because we find them to be rather advantageous, the must-haves, he calls them. So why don't you give us your kind of short list, or as long as it needs to be, I guess, to draw the comparison between traditional and hybrid policies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, since we've been on the subject of hybrid solutions, I'll just start with that. So we've already covered the annuity LTC hybrid. There's also the life LTC hybrid that are often and more commonly used today. And that's simply built on a permanent life insurance policy that, much like the annuity we were talking about, has that extension for long-term care benefits if you need them. So the biggest advantage or selling point of this type of policy for the people who sort of gravitate toward them is that some sort of payout is assured from the policy. Whether you at some point do need long-term care, it will pay benefits for long-term care. If you don't ever need long-term care and you own one of these policies, there will be a death benefit paid to your beneficiary. And that is most of the time what you paid into the policy. And the third way is that if for whatever reason, 10 years down the line, you decide you don't want the policy anymore, you've already paid for it, you can surrender and get some or all of the premium that you paid for. Mm-hmm. That's not very common. I think less than 1% of people today holding these policies actually ever surrender them.
Yeah, but, so I think that's a good, you know, that last point, even though it's not very common, people, I think, have heard that there are these types of long-term care policies where someone gets the money back out. Either you will get the money back out, a multiplied factor of that money. If it's for LTC, kind of like with the annuity hybrid that we talked about a moment ago, they magnify the payout if it is in fact for LTC benefit or expense coverage. Here, the same thing. You get a magnified payout if it's for LTC specifically, but you get this payout, and most people envision it, if I die and I don't use it, my beneficiaries will at least get the money I put into it, which is how most of these are structured, as you mentioned, pay back the premium to somebody. But some people we don't point out, or some people don't realize, you can call it off. You can essentially claim that payout of just the premium, roughly the premium that you put in, at any time if you decide you just are convinced you don't want the coverage anymore, and you personally would rather have it instead of leaving it to your beneficiaries. So that's a good point that you brought up, that exists. And these are the types of policies that have that feature where you get back a minimum promised amount. That's probably the biggest determinant or distinguishing characteristic between these and traditional LTC. Because I'm not aware, this is another, correct me if I'm wrong, of a traditional LTC policy that has this promised giving you back your premiums kind of a concept. That's not how they work, correct?
Well, there are very limited return of premium options you can add to a traditional policy, but they typically aren't very compelling in terms of the cost to add those. They're nothing like a full or, you know, 100% death benefit for what you paid into the policy. That I think maybe one traditional carrier might offer that, but they're typically very expensive. Mm-hmm. So generally not something that we look at on those policies.
Okay. So why don't you comment on, so you talked about that one feature that's mm-hmm. difference between them. Talk about the premium payment options maybe between the hybrid and the traditional.
So first of all, I just want to emphasize that these policies are, and the annuity LTC that we talked about earlier, these are focused on long-term care. That's their purpose. So this hybrid life and LTC policy, it's not intended to be solving for your any life insurance needs. It is a benefit, but again, the focus is on long-term care.
Right.
But in terms of the premiums, they're often paid with a single premium. However, all of the companies offer varying payment plans, like pay over 5 years, pay over 10 years, 15 years. It depends on the company. But the difference here is that those premiums are guaranteed. So they're guaranteed level if you spread those payments out. They can't increase those premiums. And that's, as we'll talk about in a moment, and that's not the case with traditional policies. So the premiums are guaranteed. And of course, if you're paying a single premium, it's one and you're done. Some of the advantages that are worth mentioning here, there are two ways you can be paid benefits out of a long-term care policy. And those are either through a reimbursement or through what's called a cash indemnity payment. And the reimbursement payment is going to be for care that has to be from a licensed provider. The paperwork has to be filed and approved, much like your health insurance works. With cash indemnity, which is available on some of these hybrids, if you want your monthly benefit just to arrive as a check or into your bank account every month, no strings attached, meaning you can spend that however you want, then that's what the hybrid policies do offer. Not all of them, but that's what you have to look at if you want that style of payment. Now, I say no paperwork. At tax time, there is some paperwork. But in terms of the day-to-day billing or month-to-month billing on a cash indemnity, there's a lot less paperwork for that part of the process. Some of the other advantages, Chris, to mention, I think we did mention this about the annuity. You can also do one of those 1035 exchanges into one of these policies. And often what we'll see is you might have, let's say you have $100,000 cash value sitting in a policy and you want to exchange that for one of these policies. You might need to add an additional premium payment depending on how much cash value you're exchanging and depending on how much of a benefit you want. So if you want a monthly benefit of, let's say, $6,000 a month, but the cash value you're putting in isn't going to bring you up to that amount, then you might have to also add an additional one-time premium to purchase that.
That's good to know so you don't have to have cash value to get you all the way to where you wanted to go with your coverage. You could use that and then top it up, essentially.
That's correct.
Yeah,
and it varies with carriers, but just in general, yes, that's usually an option that you can utilize.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Let's see what else, some other benefits. So, underwriting, I think I mentioned earlier with the annuity, the underwriting also tends to be more streamlined and a bit less stringent. And in some cases I've seen with some of the carriers, you might only have a phone interview. They might not even pull your medical records. It just depends. But with all of this type of insurance, you're going to have a phone interview typically. Mm-hmm. To talk about your medical history and your medicines, any medicines you're taking. And it'll include a cognitive or a memory test. Sometimes that might be sufficient for one of these hybrid carriers to approve you. So they may not pull your medical records. It just depends. So some disadvantages. These are with one exception. These are individual policies. So for a couple looking to maybe get some benefits or take advantage of being partners or spouses, these are individual policies that you know, so you would purchase one for each spouse. There is one exception in the market where you can buy a second to die whole life policy that has long-term care benefits that a couple can share. So that is the exception, and it's a joint policy. Hmm. But for the most part, they're individual policies. Mm-hmm. The advantage of these over, say, the annuity is with the annuity, typically you have one inflation option you can put on the benefit, and it's 5%, which is very expensive. With the life LTC hybrids, you have more inflation choices. In other words, to put on that whatever benefit you're choosing, typically 3% or 5% compounding. Sometimes it's, for the most part, it's compounding. So a little bit more options there. Some of the disadvantages. So I know the questioner asked about gotchas or disadvantages. So if you're looking with all of these policies, there's potential, I'll put it that way, to deduct some or all of the premium that you pay on your taxes. Now, particularly for business owners, that can be advantageous on traditional policies, but on these hybrids, it's possible if the insurance company splits out the premium or the portion of the premium that you're paying for the long-term care part of the policy versus the life insurance. So you can't deduct premium that's allocated to the life insurance part. Mm. But if the company splits that out, then you can deduct the premium you're paying for the LTC portion.
Could possibly. Depends on your tax situation.
Possibly. So, yeah. Possibly. And again, for business owners, this can be, I've seen this work really well for business owners, whether you're a C-Corp, or whether you are a partnership or LLC, et cetera. And there are differences in how much you can deduct. But generally speaking, we always talk, if we're working with clients who might own a business in particular, we'll always ask about that and see if there's possibility to take advantage of that.
Yeah. So we're mentioning that just as a possibility, your specific tax situation, you'd want to consult with your own tax person. To see if it applies to you, because it doesn't apply to everyone or every situation for sure.
That's right. Yeah. So other disadvantages. So in general, if you look at this type of policy versus a traditional over the long haul, you're going to get less coverage for your money than you would on traditional policies. So these policies tend to be more expensive.
Yeah, and I think that's just always assume if there's a feature with insurance that's of benefit to you, it doesn't come for free. It comes right at some sort of cost. If there's when you're comparing policies, if there's something that benefits you, there's definitely a trade-off somewhere. It might not be obvious at first, but there's a trade-off. So with the traditional, since you don't get the guarantee all your premium back situation, you don't get some of the specific features, you get, on the other hand, more benefit per dollar of input with those, and so you give up some of that leveraging effect that we see with insurance, because that's what insurance is all about, a form of leverage where you put in a certain amount and you have the possibility under the right circumstances to get way more back. That's how insurance works. Some people won't get back everything. Well, some people won't get back anything. If everybody got back way more than they put in, that's not insurance. It wouldn't work that way. Someone's got to get less so someone down the road can get more. That's the whole point of, a shared pool of resources in insurance. So just keep in mind these things that might sound really attractive on the hybrid, you are giving up essentially the amount of benefit that you could possibly get compared to sinking those same dollars into a traditional policy.
Right. That's true. So, Chris, there are a couple other things to mention, and then we'll move on to the traditional type of policy. But so for the couple scenario where each owns one of these policies, there's no shared benefit. So for couples on traditional policies, which I'll talk about in a minute, you can get what's called a shared care benefit, which allows one spouse who might exhaust their pool of benefits to access their spouses to a certain extent. So that's not available on these. Now, the one policy I mentioned that is joint, the joint hybrid, that's basically a couple sharing one pool of benefits. So, you know, there are trade-offs there when we look at that. But generally speaking, you're not going to have that shared benefit on these hybrids. And finally, I do want to mention the partnership program, which protects some of your assets from Medicaid to the extent that you have one of these long-term care policies that pays out benefits. That feature or qualification is not offered on the hybrid policies. That's only a traditional policy feature. So that's a few of the, hopefully that was helpful, mm-hmm. and some of the main points on those life LTC hybrids. So I wanted, Chris, to just talk a bit about the traditional policies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So these were more common in the early days of long-term care and are still out there today, even though I think for the most part, more hybrid policies are being sold these days. The traditional policies are, just think of your home insurance or your car insurance. You pay a premium every year. They guarantee the coverage. It's pure insurance. There's no death benefit. Generally speaking, return of premium, there's no cash value being built up. It's just pure insurance. By far the most efficient way to insure the risk. But it is a fact that just as with your homeowner's insurance, if your house never burns down, you never use your policy, you did pay all those premiums. Mm-hmm. Same thing with this type of long-term care insurance. There is a relatively small initial premium outlay that buys a large amount of benefits from day one. So all of these solutions that we've been talking about today, you know, from day one, you have those benefits guaranteed. So that's important to remember. The traditional policies have more flexibility in how you design them, particularly for couples. They offer different flavors of what's called shared benefits or shared care, where if one spouse has a longer care need and needs more benefits, they can tap into their partner's or spouse's pool of benefits. There's certainly issues to consider with that. On the other side of that, you know, making sure that, you know, a surviving spouse still has the resources they might need. If they need care at some point. I already talked about the tax advantages, mm-hmm. and the partnership program that's available on these policies. And depending on how you fund this type of policy, it might be a more effective way in the long run to preserve a principal amount of money that you might otherwise pay to a hybrid carrier in one lump sum. You might preserve that and use the earnings from that to just pay the premium on this type of policy every year and retain control of that principal amount of money within your investment. So that's, you know, there are a number of different ways to look at it, but that's one thing that we always consider when we're working with, mm-hmm. with clients.
And since these premiums go, you know, indefinitely, as long as you have it, like your car insurance, as long as you want coverage, you got to mm-hmm. keep paying for it. Homeowners insurance, same way. That's how these are going to work. You are exposed to paying these premiums as long as you want to have coverage. And why don't you speak real quick to the current status of inflationary pressures on those premiums? Because a lot of people have heard horror stories about premium increases with mm-hmm. LTC.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so a lot of policy or people holding older policies, traditional policies, going back, excuse me, maybe to the 90s or the first decade of the 2000s, are seeing increases in premiums, significant. And that has to do with a number of pricing assumptions that were made in those years by the insurance companies. And what they found over the course of time, some of those assumptions didn't pan out as expected, and they had to therefore increase their premiums in order to be able to pay the claims, projected claims on those policies. And just a couple of key elements here, the fixed rate interest environment, which has, you know, up until recently been so low for so long, was one big factor for the insurance companies, because they take your premiums and they invest in government bonds for the most part to, you know, keep their reserves intact and growing enough so that, you know, they can pay claims. There also, it's a fact that here in 2022, the insurance companies have a lot more claims data than they had 20 years ago. So they're able to more accurately price policies. So it is, you know, on a new policy today, it is still a risk that the insurance companies could raise your premium over the life of your policy. But the risk is far lower than on the older policies. And I know just from recent experience working with clients that some of the policies that we've seen have been stable for one that comes to mind for 9 years, they have not increased the premium. So it is bearing out. I think there's a lot more price stability to where it's a reasonable risk. If all of the other attractive features about this type of insurance make sense for you, that, you know, premium increase is a reasonable risk to take, in our opinion.
Okay. That's good.
A couple of other things to mention. If you want full cash payment, cash indemnity that I mentioned earlier, two of the traditional carriers do offer a limited cash option, but they're all primarily reimbursement style payments. And I will say one more thing. The traditional policies are typically more rigorous in their underwriting. So, and I think I alluded to that earlier, with the hybrid products, you're going to have a bit more flexibility in the underwriting. The traditional carriers tend to be tougher.
Hmm. Someday we'll have to see if we can figure out why that is. I'm sure there's a good reason, but seems a little bit strange that that is, in fact, the case. But we don't know that answer for today. Unless you already have a short answer to that.
That might be a future.
That'll take some digging to. But it's good to observe that that's true, just so people, again, feed into that or keep in mind that if you were, you know, have trouble getting one type of policy, doesn't mean that it's going to be the same rigorous underwriting as another policy. So, well, I think that gives people a good lay of the land on the comparisons there between those style of policies. And it's not a one size fits all. One is best for everybody. That's why there's all of these choices. Understanding them, understanding the choices, weighing them, which you do, you know, provide great help to the people that work with us to kind of investigate these things and to weigh them. And some people will like certain features more than others. And there's not a lot of, I think, great resources for do-it-yourselfers to understand these trade-offs clearly. So I am not surprised we have these sorts of questions. But like with any insurance product, make sure you fully understand what you're getting into, what the trade-offs are before you commit to it. That doesn't have, you know, it's not specific to LTC, but that's always my general advice. Make sure you fully understand what you're getting, what the gotchas are, what the limitations are, before you dive in, because a lot of this stuff can be rather confusing. So thanks a lot for joining me on the show. We still have more of these, so we'll dig through some of these. We'll get back into it at some point. I'm not sure exactly. We haven't decided on a show for next week. There's a possibility that Jim will be available for that show, but if not, if we don't have anything else come up, I might call on you once again to dive through a few more of these questions. So,
sure, I'd be glad to. It's good to be back on. So,
yeah,
happy to come back.
Okay, sounds good. And I'll let everybody know as well, if you want to send in your own questions, whether they're LTC or otherwise, if you want to send them into the show, you can either go to our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or you can email Jim directly. He's the official collector of questions. His email is jim@jimhelps.com. Just make sure in the subject line you put that it's a question for the podcast. And we can only do the show if we have questions, so we really do appreciate everybody sending those in. And we appreciate everybody listening. Greg, you have a nice weekend, and everyone else have a nice week, and we'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.